Today's sponsor is Audible.com, who has more than 180,000 audiobooks and spoken word audio products.
Get a free audiobook of your choice at audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast. This week on Out Now with Aaron and Abe, we're talking The Jungle Book.
Trust in me, we have the bare necessities to make this one you want to be just like.
Wait a minute, I forgot my introduction.
We are now recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and as always, this is...
Abe, hello, hi, hola.
Out Now is a film podcast where Abe and I normally discuss new movies leakily, and that's what we're doing this week. We cover some various movie topics, jump into a mostly spoiler-free review, and then jump back into other movie fun movie topics. This is episode 236.
It feels like we were on 235 2 weeks ago, so the numerical numbering is kind of off sometimes.
We've had a few bonuses since then, but yeah, this is... 236, and the main feature for this week, we're talking The Jungle Book.
The Jungle Book?
The very same, The Jungle Book. Richard Kipling's Jon Favreau's Disney Presents The Jungle Book.
Big fan of Jason Scott Lee.
Jason Scott Lee from Stephen Sommers. That was Disney. Disney Presents The Jungle Book, so there you go. Joining us tonight, we have from the young folks, Ruby Doo. He wants to be like you. It's Jose Cordova.
What up, guys?
And from Endor Express, he has a master's in the study of Giantopithecus. It's David, yeah?
Have two bananas.
Well, thank you. That's very kind of you.
Glad to have you guys on here.
Yeah,
always good to be back. Here.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, Jose, I feel like it's been a minute since you've been on this one.
It's been like 2 minutes.
2 minutes translates to 2 years. No.
It's been a little bit, but no, we're glad to have both of you back on here.
I don't know if it's been quite
here.
That long, but a while.
It's been a while.
A while.
I should let you both know that I spelled Giantopithecus without breaking a sweat. Got it the first try. Just saying. But no, it's I was proud of it. It's good to have you guys on here, and let's do the show here. Let's get some show notes first, though. New commentary track is up. Every month we do a commentary track, and this month we did one for Punisher Warzone. Why? Because why not?
everyone's favorite dinner scene killing.
Yep, frequent guests for commentaries, Scott Brandon and Cullen were all on for that track with me to talk about Punisher Warzone and various things involving that famous Marvel flop, actually, which has a cult following. But no, it was a good fun one. And of course, last week's episode was also a bonus of sorts. It was an April hodgepodge where we talked about a lot of things, ranging from the Star Wars Rogue One trailer to more gripes about Batman v Superman. So be sure to check that one out if you haven't already. Abe and I certainly put in overtime to do that episode.
Yep, so, we did. Yeah.
And what else? iTunes reviews and ratings. You get to get those. Helps out the show. Helps other people find the show. We're getting close to episode 238, guys. So, I mean, if you want to give us a new iTunes review.
like what is the significance of 238?
Yeah, who knows?
Okay, all right.
Yeah, but no, it's if you want to log on to iTunes, search Out Now, and then fill in the blank with Aaron and Abe, which comes up pretty quickly, I'd imagine. You can give us a star rating and even write us a sentence or two or a math equation or some
or
kind of
or if you just love copying and pasting the iTunes terms of service, you can just copy and paste those into
that'd be
that.
A great one. Yeah, I'd love to get that.
That'd be the best review. That'd be like a big, a really long one.
Yeah, but whatever you put down there, it helps out our show. It helps pump us up in the old iTunes charts, so it'd be great to get those.
We're still trying to be Bette Midler and Wind Beneath My Wings.
Yeah, the Bette Midler's Beaches podcast is constantly one-upping us.
Those guys.
In the podcast.
Those gals.
I mean, they deserve it, but I mean, it's like, we're trying our hardest here, too. We don't have Bette Midler money.
CC Bloom is really killing it.
We have Barbara Hershey money. That's pretty good. I mean, but it's not great.
I mean, yeah, the most recent thing she was in was part of the Insidious series.
Yeah, we can't.
So
I mean,
she's got cash.
We can't just say Hocus Pocus have a bunch of money. That's all I'm saying. I'm just trying to guilt trip you guys, and I can keep doing this honestly. Okay.
That's Jose and David are just like, what the fuck is going on?
Guilt trips Barbara Streisand. I had that one off, so I'm done. Okay, I'm done with it.
All right.
Moving on. Let's get to know everybody. Where each week we ask each other a question or two, try to set the tone for the podcast, and better get to know everybody. All right. Abe, why don't you start this one off?
Okay. When you guys were watching if you guys watched The Jungle Book in the original series, was there a character that you liked the most?
I was always a Bagheera fan.
Bagheera! That's the way that Baloo says it when he gets beat up from the monkeys. Bagheera!
Yeah, you saying it just now is way different from the first time you said it.
Yeah, I know. That's because he says it twice.
I've always been a big Baloo fan, and not even mainly from The Jungle Book, but from Tailspin.
Tailspin.
I love Tailspin.
Oh, yo.
Oh, yo.
Did you like Kip and his little flying thing that made sense?
It's Kit.
Yes.
Did I say okay, Kit, I'm sorry, I got the letter wrong.
Kit Cloud
makes
Kicker.
All the
come
sense
on.
Of the world.
Quick cloud yeah. kicker. Okay.
Higher Kit. For higher, you know.
Higher and higher. Okay. That was an ELO interlude. Okay.
That was good.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
David?
You know, yeah, it's Baloo, but yeah, Bagheera was always good. King Louie. There's just a lot of great characters in the original animated film, so it's really hard to pick one.
Abe, did you have one?
I do like Baloo a lot, and then I also like the vultures at the end.
You like the vultures, huh?
Because they're just like, well, what do you want to do today? I don't know. What do you want to do today? And they just go on and on.
Yep.
Those vultures annoyed me when I was a kid.
Well, they also had heart because they get kind of sad and then they start circling. And...
Yeah. It was
just,
weird.
Just like the Beatles.
Yeah, they were supposed to be the Beatles, but then it was when I watched it, it was like such an outdated thing.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, I didn't know.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure. As a child, you're watching it, thinking, "Man, these Beatles references are really outdated." I have a question.
Yep.
What kind of animal would you want to voice?
Good question.
Oh, I've always wanted to be a gorilla.
Yeah.
Can we hear it?
Oh, I don't know what I don't know that I would have a voice ready. You're putting me on the spot here.
Oh, we'll come back to you. Just shout it out anytime.
Wouldn't it just be your voice?
Not necessarily.
Yeah, like, no, he's gonna do like true. Different voice.
It's not like in the Jungle Book that nobody did a weird voice for him. It's just a normal voice.
I beg to differ.
We'll get there.
My lovely girlfriend watched an interview with Jon Favreau, and she informed me that he only has like one voice, and he did that voice in Elf, and he did that voice in this movie too for the pygmy warthog. And yeah, he's the narwhal at Elf, and he has just one voice. It's just like, hey, buddy. Like, that's the voice.
Oh.
That's the only voice that he knows how to do, apparently. So he took,
okay.
So that's
all
what
right. I was thinking of the cartoon. We're talking about the live action. All right.
Well, just regardless, just voices in the Jungle Book. I mean, all those voice actors in the Stephen Sommers Jungle Book were great. That's a joke because they're all silent. But anyway. Did you have one that you would voice, David? An animal?
I think I'm going to just be boring and just say bear, yeah.
Yeah, bear attack.
Yeah, just be a bear.
I would also say a bear. I just gravitate toward that because I don't know. They seem friendly, not really. But I've seen way more bear movies than I have panther movies.
Fair enough.
Well, there's one coming out next year.
The remake of The Bear from 1984, where I cried my eyes out as a 6-year-old.
I feel like you've mentioned that multiple times on this podcast at this point. You crying your eyes out at The Bear from 1984. And you say 1984 specifically all the time, too.
You know,
like, not the other bear movie. The Bear from 1984.
You know it's just red paint, right?
You ruined it!
It's not real blood.
I'd probably voice a turtle. That's what I'd go for.
That's a good one. Like a ninja turtle?
No, Abe, come on. What are we talking about here?
That'd be funny. Let's hear your voice.
I'll leave the Ninja Turtles to Johnny Knoxville, as he's doing already. I don't need to voice a Ninja Turtle, but I'll voice a regular turtle. But it'll be really high, too. Like a really high-pitched voice.
I'm
a turtle! Maybe moving really slow. It'd be really counterintuitive.
But like a really... Yeah, I was going to say really like...
We'll be there in no time! 4 hours later. We made it!
What's the look of this turtle? Are you on hind legs, or are you all on a fours, and... Are you wearing glasses?
Hind legs? What is this? A Zootopia?
It could be Zootopia.
Is this a WB cartoon from the 40s? No, it's just a regular turtle that walks.
Okay.
Yeah.
I could picture Aaron as a turtle.
Thank you, David.
You just put a shell on him and there you go.
I put a shell on you and now you're mine.
#Hocus Pocus.
Nailed that one.
Yeah. Call back.
Wouldn't get in the way for that one, guys. Put that in the bag of greatness right there.
Oh, I have. It's stored there.
I am proud of that joke.
It's in Gringotts.
I'm lingering in it with its wake right now. All right, that's how you play.
No, everybody.
All right, let's move on. Now. Let's get out of piggies.
Tim?
Each week out now, he will move me the week. Talking about the movie. The movie.
Tim? There was a slip-up just in the early third of that.
Only because of the excitement over that joke that I'm still having.
Okay, all right. You're just giddy. I'll give it to you this time.
Well, I'm going to give it right to you right now, Abe. Did you see any other movies this week?
I did. I watched Hardcore Henry.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and I think that I liked it for the first 15 minutes, and then I thought, yeah, nah, I can't really see what's going on, and I'm kind of bored. because the movie, while it's first person perspective, it's good in the gore factor and the whatever other else. But if you take away the gimmick of the first person perspective, there's really nothing in this movie, except for Charlotte Copley. I think that he has a really fun time doing whatever. He's also a producer in this movie, but
he gives it his all. I certainly agree. I think he. I think it's probably his best performance since District 9.
I haven't seen the A-Team, and I haven't seen...
You ever saw the A-Team?
No.
You'd love the A-Team.
I would love the A-Team?
I think you'd have a lot of fun with it.
Okay, all right. I'll have to give it a shot then. But for Hardcore Henry, there's really nothing there, and there's kind of some cool things in there, like, but they never really explore it. Like, there's a central bad guy, and he's got telekinetic powers.
Yep.
Well,
it's a video game. You don't need to explain it.
Yeah, I would agree. It really much is. It's the tutorial phase of a video game. So,
I agree with you. I mean, I didn't get bored until about 70 minutes in. But I mean, that's still
70 or 7?
70.
Okay.
It basically the last act kind of killed it for me.
Yeah, I don't know. You kind of get the feeling of what they're doing right away, and it kind of gets boring. So, anyway, if you're gonna see it, then I'd say just it's a DVD.
Did either of you guys see it?
No.
Jose?
No, I didn't get around to seeing it. I'm meaning to only because I've heard some, just that some of the stunts and stuff are really crazy, and, you know, that's my main interest, I think.
It's funny because I, having seen it, I do, the stunts technically are amazing. I mean,
well, they've got clever editing around it.
Well, there's clever editing, and there's also, let's just run on this bridge over here. Like, there is a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of, Russian parkour.
But that actually happens, and I think it's admirable to praise that kind
of thing. Wait, I was just saying the crazy Russian stuff.
It's admirable to praise that kind of thing, because it is stunt guys doing crazy things, but at the same time, I kind of wish I could see it more. The first-person perspective, that's neat, but at the same time, watching parkour in first-person... Not quite as entertaining as watching somebody do parkour from the third person. I mean, that's why I'll keep watching District B.
District B 13,
and I won't keep watching Hardcore Henry. Jose, have you seen any other movies this week?
I haven't made it out to the theater to see anything else this week, but I watched some 30 for 30s.
Oh, nice!
Which are always fun. Yeah, I watched Fantastic Lies, which is about the Duke lacrosse kind of like a whole rigmarole.
When's the last time anyone used that word?
I thought that was a standard lacrosse move.
Yes, that's a
rigmarole on three.
No, just the very complicated situation, you know, that happened there in 2006.
Right.
I think it's a really well-made doc that kind of does a pretty good job of presenting facts from kind of like both sides of the case. And then I watched This Magic Moment, which is a lot lighter.
This Magic Moment.
Yeah, which shares a title with a great song. And that one's about the heyday of the Orlando Magic in the, early 90s? Which is when
With Shaq, Penny,
Penny Hardaway, yeah. Which is like, when that was going on, I was like 3. So, or 2. So it was interesting to kind of read about that, because my memories of Shaq are always with him with the Lakers.
And Kazam.
And Kazam. And Steel.
And Steel.
Gave that kid a whole entire room full of candy and Kazam. That was awesome.
And going on tour with 311. Okay. That's the Shaq.
He had his own Sega video game.
Shaq Fu.
But This Magic Moment is pretty cool. I always enjoy stories about, like, you know, the crazy odds-defying things that happened, and that one's also really well made. The 30 for 30s, I think, have reached a point where they're always pretty much really well made, and then it's just about how interested are you in the particular subject.
There's a new one coming out which has been getting a lot of buzz. It's the OJ one, and I'm curious to see how that one's going to turn out.
Are you talking about the 30 for 30?
Yeah, it's the 30 for 30. It's not the People versus OJ Simpson. Yeah. It's
which is a great show, by the way. Just to throw
OJ Simpson,
there.
The making of an American hero or something, or make out.
Yeah, and that one's like a lot longer.
Yeah, but anyway, I'll shout out the title just random.
I mean, the juice always goes down smooth. That's why it takes so long to get through it.
But there's a bunch of those 30 for 30s are on Netflix. And if you're a sports fan, or just a lot of those stories are really interesting, even if you aren't a sports fan.
David, have you seen any of the movies recently?
I just rewatched the original animated Jungle Book.
Yeah.
Nice.
Any new thoughts on it? or your old thoughts?
No, it's more of a deeper appreciation for it, of how, you know, the look of it, the you know, and it's Walt Disney's last film that he actually personally worked on. And I don't know.
And I didn't know.
Yeah. There's just, it's, you know, it's always been a like very simple story, and then rewatching it, it's there's definitely a deeper appreciation for it, but nothing new story wise or nothing. I mean, I don't hate the vultures as much anymore, but it's fine. It's a fun movie. The character animation is just beautiful.
It really is. Yeah, I have it on Blu-ray. That wasn't one I was excited to get on Blu-ray because it's a very, I mean, all Disney movies are very colorful, but that's a movie that really, I think, its art design is very, it very much stands out to me because it's always been one of the old animated Disney classics that I've kind of gone to as like one of my favorites.
Yeah.
And partially because, you know, the songs, the characters, and the animation, I think it all really works well. That said, I have, watching it recently, it is very slack in its pacing. Like, it's not the most plot-driven of films. It's a lot of,
yeah.
It's a lot of Mowgli and Baloo just walking around. It's like, oh, look over there. Let's walk there for a while.
He doesn't want to leave the jungle.
No, he does want to leave the jungle. Yeah.
But I would agree with you that the music and the songs are really what make me the most impressed when I think of the old Jungle Book, aside from the animation stuff. But
yeah,
I love the music, and I love the score, and I love the songs because I'm pretty sure you guys can too. You guys probably just... If you hear the song, you can probably start singing along right away.
For sure, and that's the kind of thing where, I mean, we look at like CG animated movies now, and you kind of see how they've progressed since, you know, you can look at Toy Story versus Toy Story 3, and you can see the differences.
Absolutely.
How things have come. Yeah. I don't think enough attention gets paid to how Disney movies really evolved, where, you know, you watch Snow White, and there's, you know, it's a good-looking movie, and it's well done, but you watch Jungle Book, there's a lot more going on in the frame in that movie. I mean, in terms of the animations of all sorts of characters and whatnot, like, in the number of things moving within a given scene, like, it's the same kind of evolution of these kind of things, where you know, the increased amounts of efforts and ways of doing things and efficiency makes for a more, I don't know, dynamic piece of animation.
Question for you guys. I don't know the answer to this. Do you guys know the last Disney animated film in which they did hand-drawn stuff?
Well, yeah, Home on the Range. Winnie the Pooh was the last one.
Yeah, right? And then, but Princess and the Frog was like, that was...
Was before that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh. I think that was like 2011 or something like that.
Princess and the Frog was...
No, 2010, right?
Winnie the Pooh?
Prince of the Frog was 2009. Winnie the Pooh, I think, is 2011.
11, yeah.
It's 2011, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And they put that up against one of the Harry Potter Deathly Hallows, and it just got clobbered.
And it won. Oh, okay. I remember that story wrong, apparently.
Yeah.
I forgot that Harry Potter was
I successful. Still haven't seen that Winnie the Pooh. I heard it was quite good.
Neither have I.
It's really cute.
I've watched the trailer and it's like, this is probably going to make me cry if I watch all of this. So I haven't quite got around to it yet.
That's the problem. The trailer was really misleading and really, I thought the marketing of Winnie the Pooh, not to get too far off topic here, but it was, the trailers were pretty bad. The movie itself is really just cute. It's like the old Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh where they start with the storybook. So I think the problem is that a lot of people think that it's these preschool kind of cartoon shows that they had on Channel 7 or on ABC. You know those ones? The ones geared just for kids? Mm-hmm. Whereas the one that Walt Disney made, those were more all ages. And the movie was more is all ages. So I think a lot of people just discounted it for that. But it's really good.
Okay. I'll give it a shot.
So as opposed to other movies today, this is your father's Winnie the Pooh?
I'm not going to answer that.
All right. I've seen a couple movies that I want to mention, and one actually is very fitting because we're talking about talking animals, and I saw a movie called The Lobster, where people are turned into animals.
They go to a hotel to find their true love, right?
They go to a hotel to find their true love, but if they don't do so in 45 days, they are turned into an animal of their choosing. The film stars Colin Farrell and Rachel Weisz and John C. Reilly, and it comes from the director of Dogtooth, a very darkly comedic Greek film from a Greek director who was nominated for Best Foreign Film back then, 2013, maybe 12. But that's not The Lobster. This is his English film debut, that director, whose name I cannot think of because it's Greek and it's hard to pronounce and I don't have it on me right now.
Stephos Kopalophilos.
Yeah, it starts with a Y, actually.
Oh.
It's not a correspondent on CNN. Yorgos Lanthimos, actually. That's not that bad at all. That's easy to say. Yorgos Lanthimos. But the film, it's really funny, but it's very dark as far as the humor. Like, it's very much an acquired taste sense of humor type story. Like, you really need to be kind of into what he's selling.
Trailer makes it look all kind of pretty okay. So.
Well, it is, but at the same time, it is very. It's a very weird movie. Like, if you're sold by the trailer, I just want to recommend it regardless of how sold you are.
Sure.
But I mean, the premise is that's just the beginning of how weird things get in the movie. But it is. I think it is quite good. I think there's some performances in there that. There's a lot of the film's set in this kind of dystopian world, and there's kind of a, I'm not going to say equilibrium like sense of like a lack of emotion, but that's kind of how the performances are affected, where you're not supposed to really have much emotion.
Now I'm just thinking of an action movie, which I'm sure that's not what happened.
No, it's not. I'm just trying to take the basic premise, but that is kind of what they're trying to do with their performances, where they're very monotone, but it's very interesting to watch. But I enjoyed it quite a bit in terms of dark comedy. I also getting away from that to something that's just incredibly crowd-pleasing, I saw Sing Street a few weeks ago, actually, with my lovely girlfriend, but it now came out in a few theaters. This is from the director of Once and Begin Again, and I really like this movie. I think it's a lot of fun. It was a big hit at Sundance, and I can see why. It's about this boy who wants to impress a girl by starting a band, and so he does. He creates a band set in the 80s, and they model all of their songs off of popular 80s hits of the time. And
oh, cool.
It's just a whole lot of fun. Like, it'd be hard for me to find a reason not to, like, at least at the very least, just have a fun time watching the movie, regardless of how much it affects you. But it has a great soundtrack that Anna and I will probably be listening to throughout this summer. And
in the battle to the death between this and Everybody Wants Him, who has the better songs?
I'd probably say this movie, honestly.
Okay.
It's really, really enjoyable. And I can't wait for it to spread wider for more people to see it. And lastly, I do want to mention this because I was surprised at how good it was. Barbershop, The Next Cut, the third Barbershop movie, fourth in the series, if you count Beauty Shop. Ice Cube.
Thank you for that concise history.
I'm
Barbershop universe.
Just keeping it real. Just keeping it real.
Cinematic universe?
Yeah, the BCU. Barbershop 3 is the best in the Barbershop series, and I don't mean that like in like a snide way. I think both the first two films are enjoyable. I think they're very likable movies. I think this one is the best, though. I think it does a very good job of being fun in the same way that those movies are, where it's just, you know, a bunch of people talking in the shop and talking about, you know, like kind of things like they, like gender politics and cracking jokes and whatnot. And in the background of it, since the movies, they've been set in Chicago, it addresses, you know, since 10 years ago when the last Barbershop movie came out, the gang presence in Chicago has risen dramatically, and this movie has that as its plot line, and it really works well. If you saw Chirac last year, or, you know, heard of it, or know about it, or listened to us talk about it, this movie works as a kind of a lighter play on Chirac, and it's really well done in that regard. It's from the writer is Kenya Barnes, who's the creator of Blackish, and it's done by Malcolm D. Lee, who's Spike Lee's cousin, who also did The Best Man and Undercover Brother and other things, Roll Bounce, and Ice Cube. It's not like, you know, it's not like he came back to this because he, you know, had flops on his hand. Ice Cube's been pretty successful over the first time, so it's not like he needed to do this, but he wanted to do that, I think, because he legit wanted to, like, go into something that mattered, and this movie is able to both be fun and be about something that matters. And so I heartily recommend Barbershop The Next Cut, because it's a lot better than I would have expected it to be. And just a great cast, a lot of fun people in this movie.
The thing that always made me, or the thing that threw me off in the first one was when they make Cedric the Entertainer a lot older. Mm-hmm. And so I was always thinking, is he older than I think he is? But no, it's just a character
just
in the movie.
That's just the character he plays.
Right.
Who is probably, I assume, will just never age, because he's just always going to be that old man. He's
going to be 68 forever.
There's no real, like, logic to his character in that regard, as far as, like...
Because everyone else is playing their age.
Well, like,
think
of it this way. In 2002, Barbershop came out, and Ice Cube was still kind of young. Now it's, like, it's, you know, 2016, and like, his character is now, like, a father and a family man, and, like, has to worry. Cedric's still the exact same as he was in the first Barbershop. But no, yeah, the Barbershop, The Next Cut, quite good, and that rounds out my three very good movies that I saw this week. So, all right, let's move on. Now it's Out Now Quickies.
Tim.
Let's move out Now Quickies.
Tim.
Okay, make it sure.
Tim.
Got it.
I thought you were gonna go
see?
Another one.
I got
Gestapo.
It's all right, I guess. I gotta, you know, I gotta keep you on your toes though. Let's get to trailer talk, where each week go for the
books.
Yeah, now you're see.
Now you got me all paranoid.
Yes, everybody's coming to get you. Let's do some trailer talk. We talk about one of the newest movie trailers, when it's coming out, what we think of it, what have you. And this week we had the debut trailer for Doctor Strange, the latest or the upcoming film in Marvel's Phase 3. There's so many things to qualify these movies, it seems, nowadays. This film will star Benedict Timothy Carlton Cumberbatch, of course, Chiwetel Ejiofor, Rachel McAdams, Mads Mikkelsen, and Tilda Swinton as the Ancient One. The film features Cumberbatch as Stephen Strange, a neurosurgeon who gets in a car accident, loses his professional license, I guess, to do neurosurgery, and goes to find himself, and then soon finds himself in the realm of mysticism. And we go from there to likely solve some kind of problem involving evil people. It's another Marvel movie. It's coming out later on this year. Let's start with David. What did you think of the trailer for Doctor Strange?
Well, it's very obviously very Inception-y, you know, and
it's very Nolan-y, I would say, in general. Like, there's a lot of Batman Begins in there as well.
That kind of thing going on.
Can we get that again for a sound clip?
But it looks interesting. I don't think it's just a teaser, so they're not telling us the whole story, but it's just like kind of an introduction of it. And it looks interesting. I'll definitely be checking it out, but more so because it's Marvel, not so because if this was just like a random movie, I would be like, okay, I would need to see more of the trailer.
That's an interesting point. You wonder, like, because the Marvel brand is so consistently strong, I think it's fair to say, mm-hmm. you wonder if this movie didn't have, like, if the Marvel Studios logo didn't pop up at the beginning of this trailer, would you be interested in this movie? Because I think it probably would feel something like, I don't know, The Last Witch Hunter, if you didn't have the Marvel thing right in front of it.
Right. I think the brand definitely helps a lot, and it raises awareness, like, oh, okay, this is part of that series, and I've been watching those series, and I've been liking it, so I need to probably see this.
Jose? Thoughts on the trailer?
Yeah, I think I'm kind of right there. I thought the trailer was pretty cool, or, you know, teaser. A lot of really interesting imagery in terms of kind of some, you know, mind-bending things. The Inception thing definitely came to mind with the, like, tilted city and all that. But I think it's just some fun-looking things. I think it's definitely the most, maybe weird is the wrong word, but it's a little different for Marvel.
Strange.
Yes, exactly. I was trying to avoid that, but yeah, I think that's probably the best one for Marvel, and I think that's interesting. I've been a Marvel fan for a long time, but I was never really a Doctor Strange guy, and so my knowledge of him is very limited. So I think in that regards, I'm interested in seeing how they're gonna lump him into the MCU.
Abe?
I think I can compliment this the most by just saying that I'm interested in it, and much of the same reasoning that you guys have given, the Marvel logo, just having trust in Kevin Feige and what he's doing there. But I didn't really get a whole lot of, I guess, what the plot is going to be, and that's okay.
It's a teaser.
I hear things about it through just reading and whatever else, but... I agree with you guys that it does give me some Nolan vibes, not just from the sound or not just from the score, but the visuals, you know, the city bending. And also, Aaron, you mentioned Batman Begins, and Chiwetel Ejiofor looks like a straight up badass in this movie. He only has like a couple scenes, but he looks like some old school warrior.
Chiwetel Ejiofor looks like a badass in most things. I mean, in Kinky Boots, he looked like a badass. I mean, that's
never saw that, but I'll believe you. In any case, it has my, you know, it has my my curiosity and interest.
Your AMC of low perusal?
No, it doesn't need that. No, that only goes for things like Puss in Boots. But in any case, I'm curious about it, and I'd like to see a full trailer, which I'm sure will, just entice me even more.
You say that like an insult, but Puss in Boots is good.
I've heard that it's good. That's why I gave it my seal of approval.
It's better than half the Shrek movies.
Third.
I want to make Abe's seal of approval now and just walk around like Best Buy putting it on Puss in Boots Blu-rays.
They're gonna be like, "Who the hell just put all this stuff on our products? Now you've got to buy all of it."
Before I go into it, I want to do some quick feedback on this.
Feedback.
We asked a question. What do you think of the Doctor Strange trailer? Manish wrote, "Tilda Swinton is bald. I'm already in line for tickets."
What?
And Justin wrote, "Trying not to watch it. Want to be surprised. I watched only the first trailer for The Force Awakens." So thanks for the insight of how you watch trailers, Justin.
Yeah.
I was honestly, I was a bit surprised that the regard was so high for the trailer when it debuted. I saw just like people freaking out. It's like, oh my god, Doctor Strange. They're like, all right.
Yeah.
Because I watched it and I thought it was fine. It reminded me a lot of like the first Ant-Man trailer where it's like, all right, this will probably be more fun than this movie selling me. But like, I was intrigued by the imagery, I guess. The director, Scott Derrickson, he did Sinister and... what was the last thing he did? That exorcism movie with Eric Bana. He did Exorcism of Emily Rose, and he also did Deliver Us from Evil with Eric Bana. And Eric Bana. Edgar Ramirez.
Edgar Ramirez, yes.
And Joel McHale as knife-fighting side smarmy sidekick character. That's actually what he played. And so I look at that, and I'm like, all right, like he's fine, like not the most like, man, this director's on it, gotta see it, like that's not really the reaction I have. So it's like, all right, I get the Nolan vibes, that's fine. And honestly, the thing that threw me off the most though, why is Benedict Cumberbatch sounding like House? Like, what's going on?
I wondered about that too. And I didn't know
he's a doctor.
He's a doctor.
He got me there. He is a doctor. So like, it adds up.
But I wasn't sure if that was him or if that was somebody else. Okay.
Well, that's him. He's the one talking. He's like, I don't believe in any of this. Like,
because I would have been okay with him in his British accent.
I think everyone would have been okay with it. Yeah.
I don't get why he pitched his voice up like that.
He tried to be Aaron's turtle.
Like, I get that the idea is that he's like the character is a New Yorker. Like, the character's supposed to be kind of like an arrogant New Yorker who gets humbled essentially by losing the ability to do neurosurgery.
Yeah, that is the character of Doctor Strange. He's an asshole.
A classic thing that we all are able to relate to, obviously. But it's just like hearing him talk is like, oh, so I got to deal with this for like 2 hours now? Him talking this way? All right.
He's not narrating the movie, Aaron.
He's not narrating the movie, but he is. I don't know. He could be. Maybe it starts off, ever since I was a young boy, I wanted to be a neurosurgeon. Like, I don't know.
And then
he shows up just studying biochemistry in his room.
I never believed in magic. I believed in science, but then the ancient one. Like, I don't know. Like, there could be narration. Regardless, though.
Let's talk about the ancient one.
Okay.
Yes, I'd love to.
Yeah.
Because, well, how do you guys feel about that?
I'm watching a trailer for a movie called Doctor Strange, and I'm aware that it's set in various parts of the world, and looking at the cast, I don't feel like it's properly representing some of those parts of the world.
Correct.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mentioned earlier, I'm not a Doctor Strange guy. I was not aware that the Ancient One was an Asian character at all, and obviously Tilda Swinton doesn't really clue me into that fact either.
Right.
Yeah. it's supposed to be an old mystic Asian man, you know, stereotypical, but still Asian nonetheless. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to that part of the world, I don't think people are going to be like, what? Why are you having, you know, like, I don't think anybody's going to be offended. And I feel like Marvel might be, they're walking on eggshells because they're going like, okay, we don't want to go the stereotypical route, but then they went the stereotypical route and whitewashed it.
Mm.
And I feel like they were trying to, but they did correction of making it a woman, which is like one step forward, but then one step back by making her white.
Hmm. On the counter, not as it's, you know, a fully this makes up for another thing, but they did cast Chiwetel Ejiofor as Baron Mordo.
How do you guys feel about that? Because there's a history of that character and where he came from, and does that add up?
I'm probably also in the same boat as Jose, where I
don't know much about the characters.
Yeah, yeah. About these folks in this particular comic book series. What's the background?
I'm in the same camp, but I mean I see what David you're saying. Like, it's a weird kind of like Marvel. Like, they don't, at the same time, they don't want to kind of create like stereotypical caricatures. And they want to kind of take baby steps of how can we cast things so it doesn't seem inherently offensive, but it also feels appropriate for what we're going for. And it seems like they just went, well, we'll take like option three and just like gender change it or change up the diversity completely and see where things go from there.
Right.
And it's hard to say, well, that's right. or that's like completely wrong. But I do wonder if they did cast like, I don't know, if they cast James Hong as the Ancient One instead with that made it like a huge...
I think that would have been the caricature because he was kind of that in Big Trouble in Little China.
I know. So but saying so does that make it right?
No, I think, you know, so he's basically, Kevin Feige has changed it up. He says, oh, well, we'll make it so that the Ancient One changes forms over the years or something like that. And he could be
like Ra's al Ghul?
Yeah, he could be this person at that point. He could be another person. And he says, oh, well, now she's just a white woman. But, you know, why couldn't you just make it like a younger Asian man and throw off the whole stereotype type of ancient one being wise? Could have been a, he could have taken a bit younger form, but still given it to an Asian role.
Like Aang, the Avatar.
Yeah.
Not the movie, but, you know, yes, not the movie. Like Aang is like an 11-year-old who's going to save the world.
Right, because they did cast Benedict Wong to play the manservant, the Asian manservant to the British woman.
Oh, he's the Kato?
Yeah, and so it's like, okay, are we all just, okay, we're okay to be servant roles, but not okay to be actual, you know, leads of some sort? So.
Benedict Wong. I loved him in The Martian.
Yes, I did too.
I think that's when it does start to get... I hate using the word problematic because I think that word
is problematic.
doesn't mean anything anymore in certain ways. But I think that's where their argument starts to lose some of its strength if they're still casting, if they're casting around Tilda Swinton with Asian actors, why not the actual role, right? I think that's a really good point.
So David. Like on the one, because I mean it's not unlike, I mean obviously there's comic origins, but it's not unlike Marvel to get, you know, a lot of really good actors to be in their movies. I mean that's something that you kind of like about these movies, that you have a lot of not necessarily box office stars, although they seem to become that after some of these movies come out, for some of them, not all of them, but you get a lot of people that, you know, on a poster you see Benedict Cumberbatch, Chiwetel Ejiofor, Rachel McAdams, Mads Mikkelsen, Tilda Swinton. It's like, that's a pretty strong cast. I mean, yeah. Now yes, obviously you have to wonder, well, how come we couldn't do something else to kind of correct this ship? And I wonder when that's going to happen. And obviously, I mean, there's a larger argument that centers around Scarlett Johansson and Ghost in the Shell, because that started popping up again this week.
That one I feel more strongly about.
And I can understand that, because that's the lead character. And you got, you know, the whitest actress you know to play the lead character in this very famous anime. And you wonder, is she the one that's going to sell it? And I think there's an argument to say yes, because you look at, like, Lucy, which, you know, made a lot of money because star plus premise equaled money. But also, why not give a chance to see where things could go from there? That's a deeper discussion, though. That
is
a different podcast. Right. But I do appreciate it.
Our Thursday night social commentary podcast.
I do want to bring up that if Marvel is afraid of box office and they wanted to hire a well-known actress to play the Ancient One to get box office, I would argue, look at Guardians of the Galaxy, where almost the entire cast was kind of known. Like, who knew Dave Bautista? Who knew Christopher Pratt besides Parks and Rec? You know, these were...
I mean, even looking at this movie, no one, Benedict Cumberbatch isn't, you know, he's not selling tickets. Like,
exactly.
He's the internet's boyfriend, but he's not the guy that's, like, selling movie tickets right now. Like,
exactly.
This is the movie that will do it, because it's, again, star plus concept.
Right. And, yeah, and piggybacking on that, there's the whole entire thing of what we had just said of, hey, you know, we believe in the Marvel brand, so it's not as though we're not going to go buy tickets to see this movie. Right. So if you want to try something out here, yeah, feel free to, because...
Yeah.
Nobody's going to fault you for it if you decided to go completely off the path and have some Asian actor that we may have never known of, but it would have been amazing.
Right. Yeah, I don't think anybody's going to this movie regardless of Tilda Swinton. You know, it's like, oh, I have to see this.
Yeah.
Oh, it's like, when will things change at that point? I mean, and we looked at, was it Iron Fist was recently cast?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that was another...
Like, and that's now for that. That's a Netflix series, and there is a perception that... Not necessarily explicit, but some could think that seems like that could have been an Asian character, and instead it's another, you know, incredibly white actor that they have playing the role.
I don't know, but I mean, David, I think your agent should really get you on this. You're in LA.
I would be cast as Iron Fat because I, you know,
like... The stage adaptation of Kung Fu Panda.
Yes. Well, here's the thing. Well, Iron Fist is originally a white character, right?
Is he?
I don't know. You guys got me there.
I know he's a martial arts master.
Yeah, he is. Then that had its own issues because it was, you know, during that era of
when they're writing
the white guy becoming the kung fu master.
Yeah, and that's Doctor Strange too. He's the white guy who learns all this stuff from
and becomes the best of them.
The mysticism. Yeah.
Yeah. So this all
last samurai.
All comes from a history of taking Asian elements but whitewashing them, basically. And so that's where they're okay with, let's stay true to the history of this comic. But the Ancient One, they're like, what's...
Yeah. So putting that aside, and I do appreciate this discussion very much. I think it's good. the movie, for me, it looks fine. Like, I assume it'll, I'm at this point where with these Marvel movies, I'm at the very least going to get something that was fun to watch. So I'm just kind of in a wait and see, like, all right, well, let's see that. And I do agree with Jose. It does look different for sure compared to other Marvel movies. And this is maybe the one I'm most excited about to see in 3D, just because I've heard things written about it in 3D. Yeah. It's kind of the, what I can expect from it as far as seeing kind of the use of mysticism and how that's going to affect the perspective that you're having. I think that could lead to some interesting things if they choose to do so, which from what I'm reading seems to be the case. So ideally that works out. But just because if I'm going to see something in 3D, since they force it on you, I kind of...
it'll be Tilda Swinton's bald head.
Yeah. Manish would love that.
Yeah, right? All right, so Doctor Strange arrives in theaters November 4th this year. And as always, we'll see where things go from there. All right, let's move on now. Let's get to our main film review for The Jungle Book.
The jungle is no longer safe for you.
But this is my home.
Only man can protect you now.
Poor, sweet little cub. What are you doing so deep in the jungle?
You are a man cub who wants to live in a jungle.
How do you know that?
Kid, I got ears. My ears got ears.
Only I can protect you.
Forget about your worries and your strife.
What's that?
That's a song about the good life.
Will stop at nothing until he has this boy.
If anything happens to that kid, I'll never forgive myself.
All right, that should have been some of the trailer for The Jungle Book. Back from the low-key shift that followed up some of the bigger blockbuster efforts from Jon Favreau, now he attempts to combine what he has done with his family adventures like Elf and Zathura with visual effects found in his Iron Man films. The result is a live-action remake of The Jungle Book, which uses state-of-the-art visual effects to bring an animated Disney classic to life. It's pretty astonishing to watch photoreal animals talk, and the voice cast is certainly up to the task to help out. David, what'd you think of The Jungle Book?
I really liked it. I thought it was really well done. Having seen the animated version more recently and seeing how basically there's not really a story aside from these characters getting from one side to the jungle to the next... That was basically the animated story, and it was mostly all characters, really. We're just watching a bunch of characters. Mm-hmm. And this movie really adds a lot of the weight that I think it needs, the sense of urgency, maybe. And I think it's really well done. I think maybe the heart lacks a little bit compared to the animated film, but I still think it's really well done. It's really good.
Jose?
I enjoyed it. I don't think I enjoyed it as much as David. I was never a huge fan of the animated version.
Get away from us right now.
but I enjoyed it. I mean, and I really had fun with this. I think mainly from a technical standpoint, I think it's amazing. And the animal effects, the fact that, you know, knowing that this was basically all done in a soundstage in LA somewhere, really boggles your mind. And, especially seeing it in 3D, which is not something that I typically do these days. I think it's really just really, really... It's the power of going to the movies, right? It's not something you're going to get at home. And I think in that regard, I had a really, really good time with it.
Abe?
I really enjoyed this movie as well. And I think that one of the things that I would characterize it as is movie magic at its best. And it's kind of what David and Jose were alluding to, which is it's one boy... And everything else around him is not there except for post-production work, and then you'll see it on the screen. And I would agree that I don't think that there's that much of a story, and there's not much heart, but I enjoyed the characters, and I enjoyed the journey that they're going on. And there's a lot of nods to the original animated movie, which pleased me and put a smile on my face and made me feel warm and bubbly. And I appreciated that, but the part when I really started enjoying it the most was when they meet King Louis, and that's not because it's a thicker part of the movie. It's just more that, oh, wow, I'm really engrossed by the way that this Giantithilopithecus.
Giantithilopithecus.
Thank you. The way that he looks, and I'm really, really enthralled by just the way that the voice actor Christopher Walken is doing it, and it looks amazing. And you know, there are other elements of the movie that I was already amazed by, but when I saw that stuff, it just looked, it almost looked more real than the Shere Khan and the wolves and whatever else. And so I was pretty engrossed at that point. And I think that there's something that you could think about here that you can take away and kind of nibble on after you're done watching the movie at your Johnny Rockets with your buddies. But and that's the idea of, well, what does man do and how do they hurt the forest? Because there's a pretty convincing argument from Shere Khan. It's just that they don't really go into it. And I don't think that they need to necessarily. It's just that it's there for you to ponder on. So overall, the movie making of this is incredible. It's almost stellar. I love the way that Shere Khan looks as well. But I don't think that there's really a whole lot that goes on that, you know, you find that interesting. But then again, neither is the cartoon.
Yeah, I can agree to a point that the kind of story, it has to, I mean, it takes elements from the original Rudyard Kipling books and a lot from The Lion King in order to kind of make more of a story than the animated film provides, because it's basically just a hero's journey with a lot of space in between for you to kind of have fun scenes of Mowgli running around with people. But regardless, I mean, it is a kind of a visual accomplishment as far as what they're getting to show you based on a movie that was, you know, filmed on a soundstage in Culver City, where just only a kid was alive and everything else was created later. That said, I'd love to see this in the actual, like, making of stuff. Apparently they, like, the Jim Henson Shop created puppets for Mowgli to interact with.
Oh, nice.
In order to, like, kind of film a lot of the scenes. But, no, I like this movie. I like it quite a bit. I think it's a lot of fun. I think it's not afraid to be somewhat frightening for, like, a kid's movie, in the same way that older kids' movies used to kind of be. Like, it doesn't revel in, like, scary stuff, but at the same time, it does just kind of approach things in a, despite being a very CG-heavy movie, a logical sort of way, as far as showing you a ferocious tiger with Shere Khan or other things that are, you know, dangerous to Mowgli. But no, I think it's a very engaging movie to watch. I think it's partially because the voice cast is terrific here. I think Idris Elba, Shere Khan, you guys mentioned, I think he's terrific. I think he stands up high as one of the best Disney and movie villains in quite some time, up to with like Scar or, I don't know, Ursula, just like evil.
And, yeah, he's fantastic.
And on the counter, I think Bill Murray is terrific as Baloo. Yeah. And some of my favorite scenes are Baloo and Ben Kingsley as Bagheera interacting together. I think that's just a lot of fun. And of course, Christopher Walken's just, in my book, he's magic to me. So it's like him playing what he plays is, I just really enjoyed that. I would say if there's an issue I have, it's that the jungle to me felt kind of small. Like, it, for a movie that involves what should be like a very long trek from like Mowgli leaving his wolf family to trying to find, you know, the humans, it seems like there's a point where he has to kind of go back, and it's like, huh, that took like a half hour to run after this very long movie where like he's constantly, you know, getting into trouble and whatnot. It's like, oh, he just kind of run that way, and it's pretty small. So it feels oddly contained for a movie that, you know, it's not an epic. It's not 3 hours, but it is the Jungle Book, and it feels like I should see like a whole range of jungle, and it feels like, all right, we got like a small piece of the Jungle Book. Apparently, that said, we've made a lot of money this weekend. I guess we're going to get more Jungle Book in the future. So,
it made like $87 million.
A little more than that.
yeah. I want my Tailspin movie.
We'll see.
It did so well that it scared the other Jungle Book movie into releasing next year.
Yeah. the Andy Serkis one.
I'm still curious about that.
I'm curious about that one too.
I could do without it being called Jungle Book Origins, because that just sounds silly to me. But I do want to see what Andy Serkis has in planned for this, for his version of this movie. Yeah, did you guys like Mowgli?
He was okay.
He was fine.
Neil Setti, I believe is his name.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was pretty kind of like a typical kid actor a little bit, right? But I read a review that said that his movement is really well, and I think that's true. Like, he moves through that jungle very naturally, I think.
I'd have to wonder like how much kind of, not necessarily how much work yet. I mean, I'm sure there's probably some stunt kids or people involved. Stunt kids, you know. That's one of my favorite documentaries, Stunt Kids.
directed by Robert Rodriguez.
Exactly.
I was just going there.
But no, I mean, I have to wonder what kind of, I guess, training he'd have to do to, you know, kind of match eye lines and be able to be as dexterous as he's supposed to be in certain scenes. But yeah, as far as like his abilities as a performer, yeah, I mean, he's not Jake Lloyd bad, but he's not like, I don't know, Haley Joel Osment great. He's just kind of in that middle, like you guys said.
I never even thought about that, but yeah, there probably is a pretty good category of
There's good and bad in the middle. Yeah.
The voice acting here is pretty terrific. I loved Idris Elba as Shere Khan. I mean, there's just that sort of the weight. And honestly, I thought of him back in what's the movie that he did for Netflix? Just like Beast of No Nation. Yeah. And I just thought of him as that war commandant again. And
He has some true. I mean, even scenes where he's not like being like specifically ferocious as far as like running around and jumping after you. There's some scenes where he's just kind of standing and talking that just are really menacing.
When was it we came to adopt man into the jungle?
He's just a cub.
Does my face not remind you of what a grown man can do? Shift your hunting ground for a few years and everyone forgets how the law works. Well, let me remind you, a man cub becomes man, and man is forbidden!
Yeah, I mean, even when he's interacting with a cub, and I was thinking, oh, no, because you already know what he's capable of prior to that. The other things that I really liked about this is the way that they introduce the elephants and what the elephants mean to the jungle.
Yeah, yeah.
Because in the cartoon, it's a little bit more, they comic-y. Seem to be more bumbly. Yeah. And in this one, it's just, no, they are almost like the mystics of the jungle, and we should hold them in high regard. I agree with you that the feeling of the largeness of the jungle is sort of missing, because at a certain point, Mowgli runs to the human village and runs back to the middle of the jungle, like what you said, in less than a span of 30 minutes. It's more like 5 minutes.
I mean, I was talking in, you know, ratios, but it's pretty quick. What about the other voice actors? Do you like Bill Murray as Baloo?
Enjoyed Bill Murray a lot. I think that he felt like that lackadaisical bear.
Certainly more of a conniving sort of Baloo.
You think so?
Well, as far as get me to
care for Mowgli?
Well, eventually he did, but it still started out as kind of a you do this thing for me and all.
Yeah.
Bagheera calls him a con man, and I think that's the best way to describe him at the beginning.
Well, he plays it like Bill Murray would play it and not like, I don't know, John Goodman.
Relax, kid. No need to get worked up, okay?
Where am I?
This is a cave. It's my cave. You don't remember what happened, do you?
No.
I saved your life. Yeah, I snatched you from the jaws of death, the coils of death, if you will. And lucky for you, your new favorite hero, old Baloo here, just happened to be passing by. No big deal. Just tell me this. Can you climb?
Yeah.
Then let's quit wasting time and get on with it.
Get on with what?
Payback, kid. Payback.
Like John Goodman went to the con man.
No, he's always honest.
Except in O Brother, Where Art Thou? But I mean, besides...
And in 10 Cloverfield Lane. Where
and
he's...
many other things, actually. the Jeff book on John Goodman that we all know and love. Right. The one we want to hang out with that's not Walter from The Big Lebowski. That's the John Goodman that we all like.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Bill Murray was good. I think initially you can very clearly tell it's him, and then I did lose the image of Bill Murray eventually, and when he settles into the role, but Christopher Walken is the one that I surprisingly enjoyed more than I thought I would.
Surprising American treasure, Christopher Walken. You were surprised.
I just I really was afraid that it was just gonna be that he was just gonna be just Christopher Walken voicing a giant, well, not an orangutan, I guess.
Giantopithecus.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Thank you. But I thought he did a pretty good job. There was some menace to him, which we've seen him do before, but this was in like a different way, and I really enjoyed that.
Some people call it the, what's the word? Papaya. Stolen words. I say pawpaw goes to the sound it makes when it tumbles to the jungle floor. Try it. Good. Oh.
It's good.
You know who I am?
No.
I am the king of the Bad Dalag. Call me Louis.
What I was curious about with his menacing was, so by a lot, he wants Mowgli to get a certain thing for him, and then so he needs him to do this thing, but by doing that thing, like, so when Mowgli, you know, denies this request, it becomes like a chase. What's the result of that chase if he gets caught? Like, I never really understood what
the
plan.
Gonna get squashed.
Well, why would he get squashed?
He's supposed to let him go, right? King Louis, to get the thing.
Yeah, King Louis still wants to let him get possibly. That thing. So it's like, what would be the... Like, he gets caught. It's like, oh, you got me. Like,
I think we all know what the thing is. If you've seen the original, we can call it Red Rose.
Okay.
Red Flower.
Red Flower.
Yeah. What is this, Beauty and the Beast?
Yeah.
At the age of 21, the flowers is, or the rose is gonna die.
But I do agree though. I do think there's like a level of menace with him, which is what I'm. I mean, obviously the Shere Khan stuff, but the menace of King Louis' character. I enjoyed that because it is kind of a mix of like, well, it's Christopher Walken. That's fun for, you know, adults family because it's Christopher Walken. Why wouldn't you have fun with that? But also kids of seeing like there's a giant Epithecus. Right? Kids all know that term, by the way. But, like, there's a big, giant, you know, ape that's coming after this kid. That's entertaining. Oh, now he's kind of scary. It's like it kind of bounces back and forth. And I respect a film that can do kind of, you know.
Well, I respect that, too. And you get that earlier on when one of the wolves is killed. And that was kind of a surprise to me.
I mean, the first 30 minutes of this movie are not like, I'm not going to say they're relentlessly dour, but they are until Bill Murray shows up. It's not as fun as it really could be until that happens, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's not saying it's bad. It's just saying there's a real reflection on, I guess, the adventure aspect of it as opposed to the comedic aspect of it.
Sure, yeah. But, again, with what happens earlier on, you kind of get a sense for what they're going for in the movie. And
that there are stakes. There's a sense
of stakes. Yeah, there are moments of levity with Bill Murray, and that kind of gives you some reprieve. But, you know, even the stuff with Shere Khan, or not Shere Khan, even the stuff with Ka the Snake, it's kind of serious. So,
it is.
I appreciated that aspect of it. I still had fun with the movie, though, and I liked the overall outcome, but I liked how it's almost like a Paranorman thing, or just like any sort of Leica thing, where they can go a little bit darker for you, because there's no need to sugarcoat things.
I should mention this, by the way. I thought there was going to be more Ka in the movie. I was surprised that there wasn't that much Ka. That said, the scene involving Ka, the way it transitions through scenes, I thought was really cool. I really liked it. Like, it's a kind of this weird zoom in action that kind of morphs into different things. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was very, very well done.
What'd you guys think of the humans?
The humans?
Sort of like the thing that I was talking about, you know, Shere Khan's point of view versus the jungle's point of view.
There's a point that's made, but because, you know, Shere Khan is so obviously villainous, it's hard to be like, I'm on your side about this, because I don't even know, it doesn't really make an agenda out of anything. It just makes, like, it's just more of like, fire bad. Like, that's not really an agenda. That's just more of like, yep, fire bad. You're right. Thanks
for that.
Stop being a jerk to us.
I agree that
stop eating us when we're not supposed to be eaten by you.
There's a water truce.
Yeah, the water truce, guys.
I feel like it, you know, the good thing is that Jon Favreau added a Lord of the Rings epicness to a movie that really had no business, you know. And the original books were more like, you know, they weren't fun and comedic anyway. Mm-hmm. I think they were like fables, they were kind of life stories. So I think Jon Favreau did a good mix of both.
It adds layers to Shere Khan. I'll say that, Abe.
It does.
Like, it makes Shere Khan more of a, not necessarily sympathetic, but you get a, you know, it makes the villain more interesting by default. So.
Yeah. Another question for you guys here. How did you guys like, or what did you think of the introduction of the music, the singing elements of this movie?
You know, I wasn't sure how much of a musical the movie was going to be. I was aware that there were going to be songs, so I was just more or less intrigued by when they would pop up. And obviously it's not taking up a giant portion of the movie. And, you know, Christopher Walken being a song and dance man, I could do that all day. So I mean, it was fun seeing it when it came, for me. It was fun seeing it when it came up. How about you guys?
Yeah, it was interesting. I think they came a little out of nowhere. But at least for Baloo, it really really made sense in that way. I think the character is someone who likes to like goof around, and it made sense to me that yeah, he would probably, because he starts off by like humming it.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. then I like the exchange with Mowgli of like, you don't know what a song is, and you know. Especially the way that the first half of that movie kind of has played out. Yeah, it made sense that he doesn't know what a song is.
Right.
So I thought that introduction, that moment leading into Bare Necessity was pretty good. It was more surprising when I Want to Be Like You starts playing. Mm-hmm. But the actual, I think, song and the version of it was fun. That one, I think, just felt a little more out of place. But it wasn't anything too bad.
Mm-hmm. David?
I thought they eased into them just in the same way that the animated film did. Those songs kind of just like they, you know, it, you know, like a Broadway musical has like a big kind of lead in or something like that. It like that here, nor did it feel like that in the animated film.
I'm trying to think. I think some Disney movies approach their intros into songs more smoothly than others do, if that's fair to say. Like, I think, like, The Lion King is kind of my golden example of that, where I think every song that's in that movie, it feels like, yeah, this is time for a song. Like, it feels like you're wooed into that as, a mode, where sometimes it just comes out at random, which doesn't necessarily bother me.
I can see what's happening.
What?
And they don't have a clue.
Who?
They'll fall in love, and here's the bottom line. A trio's down to two.
I didn't know your Nathan Lane was that good, Abe. I'm very surprised.
Oh, wow. You know, I've heard that song many times. I think that the transitions into the song for The Jungle Book were pretty good, too. They start off speaking some of the lyrics, and then they just go into a song. I also really, really enjoyed the reprisal of some of the original score from the 1950-something-odd Jungle Book. Especially like just the jungle theme. I don't really know what it's called, but it's just it sounds like a flute.
The movie starts that way, and I really thought
yes,
it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
It just kind of zooms out, and you're like in the jungle, and it's just. And I mean, aside from the visuals, just technically speaking, I think the cinematography from Bill Pope, he's done a few of these in his day. The John Debney score, like I think there's just a lot of just great like handle on this movie. Obviously, that comes when you have a Disney movie. You can kind of work with some of the best, but it's a really well accomplished, you know, piece of CG work.
Absolutely.
And I mean, you mentioned maybe a bit of a lack of heart. I don't necessarily agree. I mean, I think the story is so familiar that it might take away from, I don't know, a certain emotional connection that we as adults might have compared to some kids that probably really love this movie.
I wanted to clarify that the animated film, the Baloo and Mowgli exchange was really just heart-wrenching in a way.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah.
And I feel like that wasn't, this Baloo is very different.
I agree there. I can agree based off where things end up in this movie versus how things play out in the animated film. I think there's inherently more emotion that comes with the animated film because the way things play out are a lot different than this movie.
Yeah, I agree. And the other example I would bring up is in the animated movie, after they escape from King Louis, they're all sleeping in the jungle, and under moonlight, you know, Baloo and Bagheera have bruises, but they have this really interesting discussion that they have to. Bagheera essentially persuades Baloo that says, "We have to take him to the man village," mm-hmm. and you know they look at Mowgli and he's like, "Oh, you're just sleeping like a little kid." Like, and there's elements to the characters that
yes
help elicit a stronger emotional attachment.
Fair, that's an incredibly good point, Abe. I agree with you there, and that pretty much sums up why one movie is probably overall more successful than the other movie. That said, if we're gonna do a live action remake of The Jungle Book, this is probably about as good as it gets, I would say.
Yeah. I would agree. Yeah. I mean, no fooling, the Jason Scott Lee one isn't terrible, but
that's a fun. I mean, it's just different, obviously.
Yeah, it's different.
It's an adult Mowgli. Animals don't talk. There's no songs. Like, it's just a straight up action adventure movie. I do like that movie. I haven't watched it in years, But I can. The thing I recall most is the very harsh death scenes of the enemies in that movie, based off the animals. but that's just me. One thing I wanted to point this out: Christopher Walken, in addition to just being Christopher Walken and fun, he is playing it like a mix of Showman and Marlon Brando in Apocalypse Now. Like, that is the character. He's playing, like, a Kurtz version of King
That's
Louis.
Interesting.
He really, I mean, just if you look at just how he's addressing himself, how he comes out of the shadows and things, it is very much like Marlon Brando in Apocalypse Now, which I found all kinds of humorous for a variety of reasons. Like, this is, like, we need to introduce this character. How do we do so? Kurtz. Colonel Kurtz. Let's go that route. Let's see.
The moment where he, like, struggles to lift himself off and, like, because he has to go into action, I thought it was great.
Yeah, there's a lot of really nice touches, and I can only hope that this is the kind of thing Blu-ray is made for. I want to see some of those motion capture performances to really get those
sure yeah down. And again, just to the filmmaker's credit, I when the movie started out, I was paying attention to a lot of the, because I knew that it was all CGI, so I was paying attention to a lot of the shadow work and a lot of the things that I would normally see with an animal. So there, and I'm glad that they take a lot of attention to detail. There's a part where Shere Khan is talking to the people at the watering hole, and you can see the mud imprints when he walks around, which is
I noticed terrific. That too.
Well, there's a question I have for you guys. Do you think the kind of the level of animation is appropriate for how they used it in this film? Like the animal, like obviously animals talking is, you know, that's fanciful. Did that affect you in seeing them talk in this movie?
I thought they did a really, really cool job, or really just a really great job of, because the way that they open their mouths is almost human-like, but at the same time, it doesn't look unnatural on the animal somehow. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the middle ground that they found there was, but it moves in a way that matches what they're saying, or at least it felt like that way to me, but it also doesn't seem like the mouth is moving in a way that a, like, wolf's mouth wouldn't move or something like that. I thought that was a really phenomenal.
David, any thoughts on that?
Are you asking me about the same question about the animals
talking?
Yeah, like
talking? Just the general quality of the animation.
I thought it was great. You know, there's nothing, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. We've seen a lot of talking animals in CG in commercials before, so I think this is, you know, and then we had the Smaug in Hobbit, you know, that's the most recent talking CG live action animal, I think. And I think they did a better job here in that it wasn't very human looking. It looked like they were animals and they were just talking.
I think it gets to it. I think it finds a good balance of, because I mean, it's not like Uncanny Valley. Like you can't, like, it's not like you don't realize these are CG creatures, but I think it does a good job of approaching that line without going too far over it, if you know what I mean.
Yep.
It's like it still feels like I'm watching a movie. It doesn't feel like someone like filmed animals and like got them to magically talk, like it, which I think would be off-putting. I think that would be it'd be too weird.
No, I was going to ask if you guys saw it in 3D or 2D.
I saw it in 3D.
I saw it in 2D.
And 3D.
It looks fine in 3D. Like it wasn't like, I know, like the commercials, they had them going out of frame to really like emphasize, like, this is why you need to see it in 3D. Yeah. And it doesn't do that in this movie, because
I can certainly think of two scenes in which the 3D might have been pretty amazing. One of them is actually in the end credits.
The end credits is they do like a lot of movies seem to know how to utilize end credits to the best effect when it comes to 3D.
There's like a pretty cute scene where that guy just comes up,
like, as much as I'm not a fan of the Despicable Me movies, the credits, they do have a lot of fun with showing like minions playing with perspective to really add emphasis to the 3D, which is it's neat to see. The Ka scene's the other one that I'd say works in 3D really well.
Okay.
And the opening, honestly, just the kind of the zoom out that they do. Like, there's a lot of interesting 3D stuff there.
Yeah, that was a new intro for the Walt Disney logo.
It was like a retro intro mixed with the new. Like,
I liked it.
It was like the new. It's like the new intro, but they did it like in an old-fashioned style, which I.
But I like the way that Disney's allowing themselves to use that logo, because they pulled away and it goes into the jungle, and then in Maleficent, it just turns and it goes to like the dark side.
Well, yeah, I mean, all the Disney's happy. They've been happy to do that all the time. Like they did that in Zootopia. They did that in they did that in, like, all their, like, Tron, like where they had completely different cat. Like castle. They haven't been. They have been, like, same with Warner Brothers. They haven't been shy about messing around with their opening logos, which I always like. I always find that to be amusing.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts on The Jungle Book before we move on?
No. Oh, actually, I had two observations. So one of them, it's kind of more for questions on the panel. How much do you guys feel that Ang Lee's Life of Pi, the animation that they did there, sort of influences CG animation today for animals? And what did you guys think of, we were talking about the voicing of animals and how their mouths work. I thought of Babe when I was watching this movie as well, and I was thinking, wow, I wonder, like, Babe looked pretty good. And,
la, la, la.
Yeah, I don't know if it was animals and they were just capturing them.
It was a mix of some CG tinkery with real animals. And Babe, yes, Babe's the Best Picture nominee, so I mean, I have no problems with Babe. As far as Life of Pi goes, I mean, that's a movie that won Oscars for its cinematography and visual effects, among other things. I'd like to think, yeah, that's a movie people probably look to as far as how to do it right, like how to do it correctly. But that just comes with the territory of having, you know, more accomplished effects at this point. I believe this is it Weta? I think Weta did.
Weta did this movie.
Weta did this movie. I think Life of Pi. I mean, not to say that all animation studios.
It was Rhythm and Hughes that did.
They did Life of Pi. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Because they went like they didn't go bankrupt like shortly after Life of Pi. Yeah, which is a shame. But I'd like to. I mean, I don't know this because there's a lot of names and credits, but perhaps, you know, there's some shared people there, but I can't just assume that.
I probably it was ILM, maybe, because Disney owns them now.
It's Weta. Weta did Jungle Book. Yeah. Okay. Which is a little surprising because, yeah, ILM does generally work with Disney quite a bit. That said, I mean, a lot of animation studios work on one movie, so it could be a mixture, but I've seen Weta's name pop up a lot more over looking into this. But yeah. All right. Let's get to this then. When would you say people should go and see this movie?
Oh, you should definitely see it in theaters. I think it's an immersive experience.
Jose?
Yeah, definitely. And my last DVD pull quote is "Better Wolves Than Twilight."
There you go. That's how we should start rating things. What's your
quote? We should have a full quote. That's a great segment.
Jose, you just got a thumbs up right
yes!
there. What's your DVD poll quote for this movie? That's a new... All right. David, where would you say people should see it?
Where?
Yeah.
In the theaters.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I...
like, how dare you assume otherwise?
I agree. Yeah, so theater is a good place to catch the Jungle Book. All right. Okay, so we've talked about the Jungle Book. Let's move on. Let's get to our sponsor real quick. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Why Audible? Audible content includes more than 180,000 audiobooks and other similar programs for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or any kind of MP3 device. Additionally, Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook download of your choice and a free 30-day trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast. Choose a book to download for free and start listening. Maybe you can find Rudyard Kipling's The Jungle Book, for example. It's just that easy. Go to audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast. Download a book for free. If you like the service, keep it. Keep the book. If you don't like the service, get rid of the service. But you get to keep that book that you download for free. So be a winner.
Read.
Or listen at audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast. All right, Abe, let's get some feedback here.
Feedback.
This is where we go over some of the... Thank you, Abe. This is where it goes over... That was very good. This is where it goes over some of the various questions and answers on our Facebook page, facebook.com/outnowpodcast. And, we got a lot of questions here that we asked our listeners, and they were happy to provide some responses.
Yeah, so we love giving feedback, and the first question we asked everybody is, what is your favorite song from a Disney animated movie? Melissa writes, Part of Your World from The Little Mermaid. Tyler writes, Let's Get Down to Business to Defeat the Huns.
You can
sing
that.
I should have said that in a more sing-songy way.
Do it.
Let's get down to business to defeat the Huns. I don't know how it goes.
It's pretty good.
Joseph writes, none that are great, just hummable. That's an interesting answer. I don't know. Justin Weatherby has, You've Got a Friend in Me. Jason Ritter writes, You never had a friend like me. Okay.
Too similar. What? No, you had Toy Story and you had Aladdin.
Yeah, you never had a friend like me. Oh, okay. All right. Gotcha.
You ain't never had a friend like me. That's that.
That's pretty good. That's a pretty good Robin Williams Junie. And lastly, Alessandro writes, I want to be like you.
Ruby-doo. I lean on Be Prepared. Or a Circle.
Because of the Nazi salutes that they were doing in that
apartment. I just think it's a really well-done song. And Circle of Life.
Circle of Life is pretty good.
Yeah.
I think everyone knows how the beginning of that goes.
Yeah. You guys have favorite Disney songs?
I like One Jump Ahead from Aladdin.
One Jump.
Oh, yep, that's a yeah.
Great one.
That is a good one. David?
I'm going to go a little soft on you guys. I think If I Never Knew You from Pocahontas is pretty darn good. That's a that was a deleted song, and then they put it back in the later DVD release because.
By the way, yeah, Colors of the Wind is also really good.
Yeah, that bad movie has good songs in it. You're right.
Yeah. Who's the voice of John Smith or
Mel Gibson?
Mel Gibson.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
And Christian Bale was Thomas in that.
Yeah, and then he was Thomas in The New World from Terrence Malick. All right.
It's a small world.
Yeah, that's a different
a movie. Whole new...
That's a good song, too.
let's move on now. What live-action Disney remake announcement would excite you the most? Manish writes, I feel like Mulan is coming soon. Manish is correct. There is Mulan in the works. And Tyler writes, Black Cauldron.
Black Cauldron, wow.
Yeah, they did announce that.
Uh-huh. Did they really?
They recently rebought the rights. That's what the announcement was.
Oh, that's the implication then, right?
Yeah.
Isn't there a dragon movie that's coming out?
Pete's Dragon.
Is that also a Disney property?
Yes, yeah.
Yes, it's an old Pete's Dragon movie from the 70s. That's I've never really liked that much, but hey, all
me
right.
Me neither. Yeah. I mean, I like the dragon, but I didn't like the movie so much.
Yeah. did you like the teaser?
It doesn't really tell you anything.
Yeah, that's fair, and that's kind of where I'm left with. But
it doesn't show you the dragon, but they released a picture of the dragon. It looks like Cringer from Masters of the Universe.
That's a good way to put it. And apparently they hired the director from Pete's Dragon to do the Peter Pan live action adaptation. So
another one?
Yep, they can't get enough Peter Pan.
DJ Khaled, another one.
Yep.
Hugh Jackman is coming back.
Jackman's coming back.
he was my favorite thing about
Pan.
Pan,
which was otherwise panned.
Oh.
Hey-o.
Next question here: what director/ live action Disney remake combination would you love to see? Tyler writes either Ang Lee on Mulan or James Wan on Black Cauldron.
Mm.
Justin writes Lion King. I saw production live action; it was amazing. The stage play is amazing for The Lion King, and he'd also love to see Fantasia. I don't know how that would work, but I'd be intrigued.
They're going to have brooms on strings.
Yeah. Manish writes, since Tyler stole my answers, I would like to see Guillermo del Toro tackle The Hunchback of Notre Dame. That is an amazing answer, actually.
Like a
real adaptation of Hunchback. Not the one where like the Hunchback gets praised by people at the end, like in that nonsense in the movie, but like a real adaptation of the actual story. I think Guillermo del Toro would be a pretty fitting choice, actually, for that movie.
That would fit pretty well, I would think, yeah. Period piece.
Yeah,
great characters.
Oh, yeah, the gothic imagery in the Hunchback. Yeah. That'd be incredible. Guillermo del Toro's eye.
Guillermo, please do this. You've given us a shout out for Out Now previously. Now we're giving you an idea for a movie. Next question we asked everybody: what is your favorite Ice Cube movie? Jason asked 21 and 22 Jump Street and The Book of Life.
All right.
Justin,
I like how you said Ice Cube. You said Ice Cube.
Ice Cube.
It's like your favorite movie about ice cubes.
It'd be, yeah.
It's your
be
favorite
that one.
Ice Cube movie. sorry.
My answer is Rango.
I should have waited more longer pause.
My answer is Rango to that question, Abe.
Ice Cube. All right. Justin has Three Kings and Boys in the Hood. Tyler writes Friday and the Jump Street movies. And Dennis has Three Kings. He gave it the new version. He just wrote the number three.
And then he corrected himself. It's like, I meant Three Kings. As if like, oh, I didn't know what you meant, but thank you for spelling out three. No,
just also make sure that we're on our
game. Our game. Yeah, no, I appreciate it. Yeah. I would probably say Three Kings is my favorite Ice Cube movie. Not because of Ice Cube necessarily, although he's good in it, but that's probably much.
But Spike Jonze is good in it too.
But everyone's good in that movie. I love Three Kings. One of my favorite movies ever.
That's a great movie.
Yeah, it really is. My favorite David O. Russell movie. Still, take that, American Hustle. I don't know.
I don't think anyone's given American Hustle that much praise.
But no, I love Three Kings. I'm a huge Friday fan. I've watched Friday plenty of times in my life. Mm-hmm. As far as an actor, and I was talking about this yesterday with my lovely girlfriend, I think that this Barbershop movie might be his best dramatic work as an actor, next to like Boys in the Hood, maybe.
Wow.
Interesting.
Given what he's required to do, it's not like Ice Cube ever really has to reach very hard as far as what's required of him from a dramatic standpoint.
But I'm gonna have to check out this Barbershop 3 movie because you've got me. You've piqued my curiosity here.
I'm not saying it's gonna change your life, but I mean, I do think it's.
I know what you mean, but I don't think it's gonna be. Yeah, I don't think it's gonna be groundbreaking, but I'm just curious to see. What it's about.
Well, I'm trying to think like other Ice Cube movies where like it really requires him to act.
Triple X State of the Union.
Like, I mean, obviously he rides on his persona, which is good, which is fine. I mean, that's why he makes money. Like, that's why he's become a great producer of things. He knows what people want out of him. But like him, as far as an actor goes, I mean, Boys in the Hood requires that, obviously. But that was like his.
Boys in the Hood. Yeah, I mean, I honestly think that he does a pretty good job as Angry Black Captain in 20. Not because of a comedic thing, but really because he's playing the Angry Black Captains of the 80s movies, and you know, it requires some effort.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, obviously, it's not to dismiss what comedic work means. That's just sure. as hard, if not harder, than drama to pull off. But I mean, it. You know, it makes me just thinking of Ice Cube and his career. It's like, what movie has he like? What like have you seen the extra effort of him being put in to like really emphasize what a character does? And yeah, those are good examples. They are honestly.
Yeah. Anyway, so those questions that we asked everybody.
Yeah, now we got a question here from Justin. I never got into any of the Star Wars expanded universe material, just original movies and prequels and Force Awakens. So, what do you think about the future of the whole standalone movies? We kind of answered this last week in our episode. But to sum it up for Abe and I, and then you guys can talk about it a little bit if you want to. I mean, it's Star Wars, so I'm going to be excited regardless. I'm more excited for the idea of interesting stories not based off characters I already know than I am of, like, prequel stories involving younger versions of characters or whatnot. Like, things that step away from the actual Skywalker verse and just more into Star Wars in general.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah, I used to read the, they were like the young adult, like when Obi-Wan was a Padawan, like books when I was a kid, and those were fun as like a peek into the extended universe. But I think I agree with you now that that's why Rogue One looks, I think, really interesting. It's like, you know, tangentially tied in, but like the Han Solo movie does not really inspire much interest for me, to be honest.
It inspires more interest based off. Like Phil, like Abe, you mentioned this. Phil Lord and Chris Miller.
Right. I mentioned it on like the original one, and then on the re-record, I didn't.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that inherently, and just like what can go with that versus like saying out loud Han Solo movie, that doesn't really excite me. And I mean, I mentioned this last week too. Like, I want to see a Han Solo movie. If I want to see Han Solo, I want to see Harrison Ford. It's because I want to see him. I don't want to see Han Solo because. Just Han Solo. I want to see it because Harrison Ford's playing Han Solo. So
right.
I'm not getting that this time around, so they better find a damn good actor. And apparently they're going with
the Eldrin.
The front runner is
shortlist.
The front runner of the shortlist is Eldrin, is Alden Eldritch. From Hail Caesar. From
Beautiful Creatures. Yeah.
Jose, you're also on the Beautiful Creatures. It's a pretty good movie train, I believe.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
I guess I should give it a go.
Yeah. But yeah, Star Wars. I mean, yes, I agree.
I'm the guy scooping the coal.
I agree with you, Jose. I do. You know, I think Rogue One. I mean, if we're gonna start off with these standalone movies, I'm very happy that it's Rogue One and not like the first one's gonna be Han Solo. Like, it's like, yeah, all right, we can see what we're capable of outside of the things we're familiar with.
Well, let me ask you guys a question.
Yeah,
if it was not a main character from the Star Wars movies but a side character, would that be okay, or all of that stuff that's included within?
Again, I've been saying Bib Fortuna movie from the start. I well,
I've well, only seen him like, for 2 seconds, but Donnie Yen. I want his movie.
Yeah, I mean, his character looks pretty cool. He's like Rogue a blind dude. But I'm thinking of something like Lando Calrissian. You know, how does Skymall. How did Cloud City get formed, and why is he wearing a cape? You know, would that be kind of an interesting thing? Or
well, yeah, that question that we had of why is he wearing a cape certainly needs to be answered in some way.
we need to know.
I mean, in my eyes, I'd like to think the Han Solo movie is a Fast and Furious type film where they race for pink slips for their ships and respect. So Lando would be like the, I don't know, the Tyrese of the universe in that scenario.
He's the one that gets the butt of the jokes. Yeah.
Yeah. But
all right.
Fast ship.
Fast ship.
Doesn't matter if you win by an inch or a parsec. Winning's winning.
we're family here. Yeah. he just gets into this tirade that Vin Diesel.
One of them actually works for the Republic, and so he's like, man, I'm an agent for the Republic. I'm gonna take you in.
I'm gonna get this Falcon supercharged.
We're nailing this Han Solo movie right now.
We're just giving out free ideas.
All right.
You never had your ship. Sorry.
Yeah, I love those books. Thank you.
All right.
That's not enough feedback.
Feedback.
Now it's a time for. Hey, what time is it?
Aaron, I think it might be time for a round of fun games. I think that was the song that played in the dream sequence when Kaa was singing to Mowgli.
Very much so, yes.
Yeah.
That was, that was the improv theme for games, guys. And what do you got for us?
I've got a game for you guys this week. It's called The Voices.
The Voices? Is this a Ryan Reynolds game?
Yes. I think those were talking animals as well.
Yeah. So.
No, this is a game in which I'm going to be giving you guys a clue about the an actor or actress and a little bit of the movie, and I'd like for you to name the movie in which they are the voice actor. So you can buzz in with your name.
Wait, so are you going to list multiple actors from one movie and we have to guess them? Is that what you said?
Potentially. Okay. It could be potentially multiple actors, but if the movie is such that you would know from one actor, I usually just go with one.
Fair enough. Then we yell our name to buzz in, of course?
Yes.
Okay.
And then, give me the answer. Give me the answer.
Okay. Right.
Here we go. Hugh Grant is the voice of a pirate captain in this Aardman animated movie.
Aaron. The Pirates?
Do you know the rest of it?
Pirates! ! The Adventures of Them.
You got half. Does anyone know the other half?
Nobody knows the second half.
No, I knew the movie, but I just couldn't even.
I don't
get
know
that
what the
far.
Whole title.
Pirates! Band of Misfits.
There it is.
But you're right about the exclamation mark and the colon. So I'll give you that. The next one. You may have never guessed that Daniel Craig voiced the villain in the Steven Spielberg animated movie about a young investigator and his dog.
David.
Tin,
The Adventures of Tintin.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, it's a very non-Daniel Craig voice for his name.
I know. I remember that you had mentioned on the podcast, and I was like, that was Daniel Craig? So, next one. This Western starring Johnny Depp is about
Aaron.
Aaron.
Rango.
That's right. Yeah. Next one here. Meg Ryan is the lead voice in this animated movie with a bat named Bartok.
David. Anastasia.
That's right.
Oh, okay.
That was Meg Ryan.
I forgot that.
I didn't know it was Meg Ryan.
I know John Cusack's in it for whatever reason.
Oh, I really like that.
He looks just like John Cusack.
the animation of the that Prince
Gay. Good rotoscoping, Don Bluth.
I love that movie.
Yeah. Next one. In the English voice cast, Tina Fey, Matt Damon, and Liam Neeson star in this Miyazaki movie about a literal fish out of water.
Aaron. I was going to say, what is Ponyo?
I would accept that. Yeah, we'll go with Jeopardy rules. Yeah. Okay.
Ponyo, Ponyo, Ponyo. That's the song.
I like fish.
Ponyo, Ponyo, Ponyo.
No.
Liam Neeson voices Ziggy Stardust in Ponyo, by the way.
That's the name of the character?
No, it's just he looks like Ziggy Stardust.
Yeah, and he has a certain set of fish.
I was like, what is this character's name? Like, a single name?
Anyway. A particular set of fish.
Next question.
I'm looking for Ponyo.
I'm looking for Marco from, I don't know. Anyway, all right.
If you put him back in the water, that'll be the end of it. But if you do not, I will find you.
He hangs up his little clamshell phone.
Yeah.
Wow. We should just make movies based on...
on this ridiculousness. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Next one. Kelly MacDonald was probably around 36 when she voiced this independent curly-haired...
David. Brave.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Yeah. Oscar winner.
For what category?
Animation.
What do you think?
It won for best animated movie?
Was it so jarring to you that you forgot?
I forgot.
It beat Wreck-It Ralph.
It beat Wreck-It Ralph and Paranorman.
Oh, wow.
Paranorman.
Okay. Yeah. By the way, you definitely need to get on the board, Jose.
I know. I'm a very visual person, and it's really hard for me to do voice actors, I guess.
All right, next one. Chris Pine's character drowned in a frozen pond in this darker animated...
Aaron. Rise of the Guardians?
That's correct, yeah.
The Owls of
Gahulia.
I forgot that was Chris Pine.
Yeah, he, you couldn't see his forehead as much in the...
It was also during that season in which they also released... what was the British? Arthur Christmas. So it's kind of competing against both those. Anyway.
I never saw that one.
It's not bad.
Yeah, I heard.
Yeah. Next one. Deve Chase, Tia Carrera, and Jason
David.
Scott. David.
Lilo and Stitch.
That's right. Wow, man. I thought I was going to get you with that Deve Chase thing.
Nope. No. She was the voice of Spirited Away. She was the American actress who played the translation.
She's had experience.
Hmm. Next one here. Kirsten Dunst and Phil Hartman voice the main characters in this classic animated movie about a young witch on her year with humans.
David. Kiki's Delivery Service.
That's right.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Last one here. You may not have guessed, you may not have recognized Channing Tatum nor Zoe Saldana, but you may have probably gotten Diego Luna in this animated movie.
Jose! The Book of Life.
That is right.
Yeah. Wow.
Not because Jose.
I'm the Mexican one.
We did not plan that out. It just happened.
That movie is great. Like, the music is great.
Yeah, they have great renditions of popular songs.
It was really good. I liked it.
Oh, it's a good one. Yeah, I like that movie.
Fantastic.
What was the and other with that, one? Wasn't there another movie that was kind of similar?
Like a Day of the Dead type thing?
Yeah.
I think Pixar supposedly has been working on one for a long
time. Coco. I thought there was two movies that were already out.
I can't think of what the other one would be.
I can't think of the other one either.
Anyway.
Recently? Was it recent? Anyway.
If you
find it, just shout it out.
Okay.
But with that, David, you won this week. Aaron, you were very close, one off. And Jose, again, we did not plan that. It just happened.
I think Jose won.
As usual, Abe happy to start with the winners and go down to the loser.
I go gold, silver, bronze.
All right, well, that was games. Thank you for that, Abe.
Yeah.
Let's move on now. Let's start wrapping things up here. Let's get to Out Now Presents What's Out Now, these movies that are coming out on Blu-ray or DVD this week, and we have quite a few things here. First up, The Revenant.
It's all right.
Still haven't seen that.
Visually pleasing.
I really liked it.
David, you were a fan of The Revenant, as I recall, yeah.
I was a huge fan of it.
I think it's certainly worth watching for sure. Let's see, Ip Man 3.
Haven't seen anything beyond Ip Man.
Ip Man 2 has really solid stuff in there.
Okay.
Ip Man 3 stars Mike Tyson and Donnie Yen, of course. It's not just Mike Tyson.
Oh, wow. It's Mike Tyson as Ip Man?
They couldn't get back Donnie Yen, so they cast him as Mike Tyson.
Like, who's the most logical actor we can find?
Yeah, but I
disobeyed my father.
I look forward to seeing it eventually just because I do want to see Donnie Yen do some more martial arts action stuff.
That's true. Yeah, he's a great martial artist.
Next up, The Lady in the Van.
That's with Maggie Smith.
Maggie
right?
Smith, yeah.
Oh, that's not M. Night Shyamalan's?
No, yeah, it's not
a follow up to 1997's Lady in the Water.
Yeah, it's not quite a follow up to Lady in the Water.
She moved.
Yeah.
To another motel.
Yeah. Then we have Norm in the North, which I think made all $3 at the box office. Yeah.
Is that a movie about Norm inside that movie North?
Yes, that's exactly what it is. It's an Inside Out like parody involving a polar bear. let's see. Next up, Marlon Shades. Marlon Wayans, 50 Shades of Black, which I can just go past that right now. Next up is The Texas Chainsaw Massacre Part 2 Collector's Edition. I am a big fan of both the first two Texas Chainsaw Massacres, so I'm very happy to see a Collector's Edition for Part 2 coming out, because that movie has some wild stuff in it.
What was that one again?
Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. It's a Collector's Edition version of that one from Scream Factory, which delivers constantly on very good genre films.
Okay.
Next up, we got a couple HBO things. Silicon Valley Season 2 and Veep Season 4. Just terrific comedies.
Yes, agreed.
Yeah. And lastly, The Stuff. If Jimmy O was on this week, he'd be happy to promote The Stuff, which is like a Blob parody. That's what it is. But yeah,
that's a good name.
The Stuff, yeah. It involves deadly sugar.
Is it for real?
Yeah. It's like a blob-like mass that like is made of sugar. All right. That's what's on now. Let's move on now to Extremely Cool. These movies that are now on Netflix that we can recommend here. And these aren't movies, but The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt Season 2 is now on Netflix.
I started watching it. It's just as fun as the original. And if you missed 30 Rock, it's basically like 30 Rock, but with Kimmy Schmidt.
Yeah, pretty much. And there's another Hannibal Buress comedy special on Netflix now. Hannibal Takes Edinburgh.
Mm.
So if you're a fan of Hannibal Buress, I know I am. That's one you can probably check out. So yeah, that's extremely cool. Let's move on to next week's show. Next week, we're going to talk about The Huntsman, Winter's War.
Oh, shit. All right.
That is that's what's coming
can't
up.
Can't wait, because we saw the original one, so we have to do the follow-up.
It's guaranteed to be one of the best long-form music videos of the year.
Can't wait.
And let's see, what else? Let's do the last thing here. What should people go and see now, and what do you plan to see next? David, what should people go and see in theaters right now?
Jungle Book, obviously. Mm-hmm.
What do you plan to see next?
Oh. I'm like, well, I don't know. I don't, you know, that Huntsman movie does not appeal to me at all, but maybe I'll just, out of curiosity, maybe I'll go watch that.
Jose? What should people go see in theaters?
Yeah, I think The Jungle Book. I think it's a good time at the movies. And I'm probably going to go watch Barbershop The Next Cut next.
Abe?
I'd also recommend The Jungle Book and next, Huntsman's Winter's War.
Yeah, I'll go different and say if you can find Green Room or Sing Street, go see those movies because they're quite good. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I've recommended Barbershop enough right now. I mean, I think it's a competent film if you want to, you know, just see a fun comedy. And yeah, I'm seeing The Huntsman next. That's the... It's on the docket. All right, so with that said, that's going to do it for this week's episode of Out Now with Aaron and Abe. You can find more of my work on my personal blog, thecodeofzeke.com. You can find my written movie reviews and other works there. You can also find me on Twitter, at Aaron's PS4. Abe?
You can find more fun stuff at walrusmoose.blogspot.com and twitter.com/walrusmoose. Hashtag headed straight for the castle.
Jose Cordova.
You can follow me on Twitter, at Jose Cordova. That's my name. You can find me occasionally at theyoungfolks.com. I should have something coming out about Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, TV show on CW, which is great. Soon we're picking our favorite...
Yeah, that's actually a really good show.
Yeah, we're picking our favorite songs because the finale is on Tuesday.
David, yeah.
You could find me on AndorExpress.net with various theme park news and updates. And you could also find me on Instagram if you like pictures at Coyete Boy, Coete Boy.
You can find all the other episodes of Out Now with Aaron and Abe on iTunes and at Audioboom.
Listen to us over at Podomatic, AJHWLOD, and SoundCloud.
Feel free to email us your thoughts on The Jungle Book and whatever else we might have talked about this week at outnowpodcast@gmail.com.
Answer questions or ask them at facebook.com/outnowpodcast, or you can tweet at us at twitter.com/outnow_podcast.
And you can post all your favorite Christopher Walken GIFs over on our Tumblr page, outnowpodcast.tumblr.com.
Wait, did you just say GIF?
No, I said GIF.
GIF? GIF? That's cowbell? GIF. Needs more cowbell.
Needs more
cowbell. Why? You don't call it... it's all about graphics.
Yes.
You don't like graphics?
I mean, to be fair, I mean, I learned it because choosy moms choose GIF. So, that's how I mean,
I thought you said GIF, which made me go like, wait.
All right. So with that out of the way, Jose, David, thank you both for coming
thank
on today.
Thank you both.
Always a thanks good time.
Thanks for having us.
And that's going to do it for this week's episode. So until next time, so long.
And goodbye.
I'm God among you around. So ooh, I wanna be just like you. I wanna walk like you, talk like you do. You see, it's true. I live like me. To learn to be human too.
Put him back in the water. That'll be the end of it. But if you do not, I will find you.
He hangs up his little clamshell phone.
Yeah.